Crouch. Bind. Set.
Joe presents The House of Rugby, Season 3.
International rugby is back with a bang. The Six Nations provided plenty of entertainment, and we hope to do the same over the next hour or so. Well, Scotland won at Twickenham for the first time in 38 years. So obviously I was wanting to do a Scotland special. That was given a no instantly by everyone. So basically you've got a Scot, an Irishman and a Welshman. We sadly didn't walk into a bar and there are no jokes. But welcome Sean O'Brien and Adam Jones. How are you, gents?
Very good, Lee. Very good.
Good. Good. You?
Very good, thank you. You both had Saturday matches, you both had victories, so well done on those. But what it did do is free you up to watch Wales-Ireland on Sunday. We're going to go into it in a lot more detail later on in the programme. But Adam, a sigh of relief, I would imagine.
Yeah, we knew how good Ireland are. You know, there's been a lot of talk from across the sea this week, isn't it, how they were going to thrash the Welsh and there was going to be a 40-pointer and all this type of stuff. And some of our players are past it and shouldn't be playing rugby. And
who was saying all this stuff about winning by 40 points?
Journalist, wasn't there? Radio guys out there.
An Irish fella.
Yeah.
Jesus, that's outrageous. Like, we don't have a good record against Wales, especially in Cardiff.
No, well, is it, isn't it?
Yeah.
It shows how confident they are.
Yeah, the journalists.
Well, don't never believe a journalist, that's for sure. Let's talk about what Adam said about age. You're never past it. That's what Tom Brady showed us at the weekend. It was a big weekend of sports. Sean, I know that you're an NFL fan. 43 years old. I imagine that you're still going to be as good as you ever were at 43 years old.
I genuinely think I actually watched the film again the other night, Benjamin Button. I think I'm getting younger. maybe just in my mind. Not the way I'm looking. Anyway, at the minute, I'm looking a bit beat up. But I tell you, he's a credit though to himself and, you know, any organisation he joins. And do you know what I like about it too? It's his personality, like himself and Gronk. And Antonio Brown, who's had like an awful like 16 months, maybe 17 months as well. Like they were saying he was never going to play in the league again. And then just the crack to have as well, like making ads before the Super Bowl and then the actual game itself, like how he controlled the whole game. And the bit of banter he was having with certain lads during it. But I read somewhere today that he texts into the WhatsApp group all week for 7 days straight saying, "We will win." That was all he said every single day. I'd love to be in an organization that he's in and see like what he brings day in, day out in terms of his leadership. Mm-hmm. And to see what type of a fella he is, like how much of a perfectionist he is. But fair play to him. And we all have that dream, don't we, of staying playing that long. He's in the privileged position of sitting in the pocket and not getting hit too often, where myself and Bomb wouldn't be. we wouldn't have the arm to throw. We'd probably have the footwork, Bomb, would we?
Oh, I think so. Yeah. I got the 35. That was enough for me.
Yeah, and I'm 34 on Sunday, so.
Ah. Well,
I don't look at
happy
now, mind you, but I am.
The cards in the post.
It's interesting because I know a lot of sports teams have gone to him and he gets involved with Formula One. He's friends with Lewis Hamilton and they wanted to tap in. He's the kind of perfect person to tap into and get his experience. He has a lot of different quirks. He's got this like really weird diet, doesn't he? I mean, I've been lucky to interview him a couple of times, but I also know that Dan Carter was desperate to play into his 40s, not to sort of emulate Tom Brady, but as you said, Sean, maybe it's easier for a back to play into their 40s than it is for me, for you and Adam.
100%. We can't hide, or we can't like just shift on a pass. And in fairness to Carter, is one of the things I've admired about him his whole career. He never really got much hardship because he's such a good player. Like he's not like a Johnny or a Faz that gets belted every now and again at the line, or a Dan Bigger. He always seems to have so much time on the ball, and it's kind of like Brady looking at the highlights of the Super Bowl. Like he's just so comfortable there. Like just nothing phases him. So yeah, definitely backs could get there if they're mind their body and kind of superhuman. But nowadays it is pretty attritional, and I don't see any forwards making it to 40. Although Brad Thorne was 37 when he came to us, I think.
Simon Shaw was getting on a bit, Simon Shaw's as well.
So maybe the second row.
Sorry, Philo Tiatia came to the Ospreys when he was supposedly 38, but I think he was a bit older.
I don't think any of them don't know their exact date of birth, don't they? Like the passports on the Islanders are, I think it only comes every 3 years or something, so it works in their favour.
They are getting younger. Lucky them.
Another year or two now, I definitely won't be going till 40, I can assure you that.
I don't know much about Mike football, but it amazes me when you see pictures of him doing the combine, and then in the draft he gets picked up, like, I don't know, was he sixth quarterback or seventh quarterback in the draft? And then
there was a stat up today about, like, after the combine of the notes that were taken on him, and it said like too fragile, not quick enough, arms not strong enough, no speed, all this kind of stuff. And then you're there, and then underneath it just has but 7 Super Bowls or something like that. Yeah. So it's incredible, like, how someone who was like just gone by the wayside and comes and does what he's done in his career. He's met a nice few bob as well over it. He's a nice missus too, mind you.
Yeah, it's not a family you need to feel sorry for, is it? A supermodel, a 7-time Super Bowl winner. But has he ever hung out the window of a car only wearing a cape to be possibly arrested or not arrested? This is the video that's doing the rounds because the Lions shared it. Tell us the story, Sean. Basically, you're hanging out the window wearing a cape.
Well, the story was we had to, we split up into teams that day. And we had to find a New Zealand pie, so which was like world famous. We had to do several bits and pieces anyway. So there was myself, James Haskell, and Jack Noel in our car, and
so like the naughty step.
Yeah, it was probably the three of us were a bad influence on each other, to be fair. But we came up with that idea of like Superman type thing, and it turned out pretty well in the end, but the boys got it. The boys got a right kick off it when we showed it in the team room. So we actually won, obviously, best video, and the Lions shared it during the week. So it's doing the rounds at the minute, but pretty fun and nice to have those memories. But
so you weren't really arrested?
No, I wasn't really arrested.
Otherwise, wouldn't be doing the rounds.
Exactly. We had it set up. We actually were in the middle of getting a pie each, and these two police officers pulled up, and one of them actually played for Samoa. He's a loose head prop internationally years ago, and they were really, 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 really good guys. So we said to him, listen, we're going to take off in the car, like properly pull us over and, cuff me up. So, and then we had it all planned. Like, so they drove down the road, obviously, a little bit, and I like kicked the back door open and jumped out and back into the boys' car. It was actually great fun, and they were really, really good lads. Followed us back to the hotel and everything. And, I think we sent them a jersey afterwards. Not sure, but, it was good fun. One of the good days on that tour, definitely.
Well, you've got to enjoy the good days, and a good day for me was on Saturday because I was lucky enough to be at Twickenham at the weekend. Bizarrely, a newspaper wrote an article yesterday. They got in touch with me, and we counted up the number of Scottish people who were there in the gantry watching, who were outside of the Scotland rugby bubble. So there were apparently 12 people. It was sort of ruined when they said that in about 50 years' time, people will come to interview me in an old folks' home when I can't get that, sipping my spoon, and I'll be the one that's saying I was there on that day. We've never won there since. But it was a momentous day, 38 years since Scotland had beaten England at Twickenham. Adam, what did you make of how Scotland played, how Scotland dominated, and sort of England unravelled with that penalty count?
No, England, they weren't at the races, and I guess you can look at the Sarri's boys haven't played for a while and whatnot. But I think Scotland are starting to show now not the promise, but to be fair, every now and again the Scots they talk a really good game. And they're gonna push and win titles and stuff, but they're coming out of the fall a little bit, and they're starting to back up what sometimes they've said. And No, they're a good side, and they're going to cause teams problems, especially with the way they can. It's an all round game they've got now as well.
And Sean, England were a bit ring rusty at times. Not having crowds there means that we all get to hear so much more from the ref's mic, and things are being picked up. And you guys, you and Adam, you know, you'll be used to this all the time. But it's so interesting when you're watching from home or you're seeing it from a different point of view. There was a moment where Xander Fagerson said, "Genge is struggling." Now, this was just a throwaway line that was picked up on the ref's mic. I'm not sure if he was exactly saying it to the ref, or maybe he was hoping to be heard. But how much chat goes on in that scrum situation? The dark art of a scrum, is it abuse? Is it banter? Is it friendly? Or are you constantly niggling?
Are you?
Go on, Bob.
Both of you.
You're a master of the scrum anyway, so you go first.
I was actually going to abuse you, so I don't
know. But definitely carry on.
I think, you know, obviously lads have a bit of crack with each other and a bit of banter. And I think, like, Xander's one of those guys as well that gives you a bit of lip on the field. He's a bit chirpy at times. but I wouldn't say that he was saying it to the ref. I'd say he was just saying it in general to get at Genji. But there is a little bit of lippiness between front rowers. It's... it is the dark arts. And sometimes I'm looking at him saying, "Shut the F up and just get on with it, will you?" And just like hit the scrum and go forward first and stop all this like angles and bits and pieces like that. But Bom will explain it a little bit better, but I've heard little bits of it, but I wouldn't say it was actually to get the ref's attention right now. It's probably to get Genji wound up a little bit, because the boys know he's a bit of a hothead.
Like I learned early on, you don't really say too much, because it can come back and bite you on the ass pretty quick, you know, in the next scrum. And so I think you find hookers are the ones who chirp, unless you've got a Marler, unless you've got, one of those type of players. Maybe, you know, I could probably add Sinclair to Kyle to the mix. So two Quinns props, well, two guys, of course. But no, I think hookers are usually quite chirpy. A lot of the noise comes from the people on the side of the scrum. Like, you know, the oversized flankers, you know, it's the old, will you keep that scrum up, Bam? Will you, you know, that type of stuff. And, are you too lazy? No, they're the ones usually quite chirpy. You know, Michael Hooper was unbelievable with Australia. Oh, my God. And for a country who's such a shit scrum, and then you got the flanker who's given the, the big one. All that. So he was an annoying one. But no, look, I learned you can't give it. It's a risky one if you start, you know, giving it the big one, saying he's struggling, because next scrum you could easily come back and shove your head up your arse, and it's and you look like a right plonker then, don't you?
Exactly.
Well, speaking of front rows, let's talk to somebody who was instrumental in the front row for England at the weekend. We can get into the England camp. Luke Cowan-Dickie. Luke, great to have you with us. How are you?
Yeah, good. Good. Obviously a little bit disappointed for the weekend, but... ready to go this week.
So you know what we've just been talking about. It's basically been the fact that we can hear so much more chat now on the ref's mics. A lot of it is coming from the front row. Adam blamed the hookers. He said it's never the props, and he was always an angel when he was playing. Would you describe yourself as someone who's quite chirpy, who's full of chat?
No, not too much. Obviously, if a scrum decision doesn't go your way and you know it's not your fault, of course you're going to ask the ref questions. Refs are normally quite good. They sometimes let the hookers speak. It's when you're loose and you're tired, get a bit touchy, and then they butt in a bit.
Are you saying, Luke, that they're not as intellect as the hookers? Is that the problem?
No. That's not, no. So I ain't saying that. It's just... sometimes the refs come to you, and then you get, you know, your tired head losing the plot, and then that's when the refs stop listening to you, and then things can go to...
Well, we all know the tight head knows the most about the scrum, so to be fair, you should listen to the tight head. And I've done a lot of analysis on Exeter over the last few years, and the hookers are always the ones who speak up more than the props in that Exeter scrum.
Yeah, well, Egg's the captain, isn't he? So he has to speak. Our boys down there... well, I'm thick, but they are stupid. So I have to speak. I'm the only one that can actually get words out.
Oh, that makes sense.
I think we probably know the answer to this, but within the England camp, who has got the most chat in this sort of game moment?
Probably Carl Sinclair. Yeah, probably Sink.
Adam alluded to that.
Yeah, probably
Sink. He was like that a couple of years ago. He's actually probably after calming down a bit, I think.
Yeah, I think he's trying to get hold of himself. Yeah.
Well, he's a big job in his hands.
Look, it's obviously a very different camp than what you had in the Autumn Nations Cup and what you'd normally have during a Six Nations. How limited is it actually?
Yeah, so social interaction stuff's quite limited. The only real time we get to spend together is on the training park. Sometimes after we can do skills, and we normally stay out there mainly just to have a bit of crack. And then food time, so like breakfast, lunch, dinner, we get to spend time together. But outside of that, pretty sure there was a limit. I don't know if it's changed, but it was a 15-minute limit when you're inside social interaction. So it's been tough, but we found ways around it. A lot of boys have bought consoles and stuff, so we just speak on the mic now. That's good.
And that's your ideal scenario, isn't it? Because you are, like, we all know about your gaming skills and they're up there.
It's my ideal, yeah. I'm not too, well, I'm not saying I'm not a people person, but, you know, if I can speak to them on the mic, not face to face, it's much better for me.
I was at Twickenham at the weekend. I spoke to Jamie George after the match, and he was saying that what's going to be really interesting this week is actually when you sort of need to lean on each other, and you would have done that previously through socials after a defeat. So how have you been working that since then? Because it is limited, isn't it? You can't really interact so much, but you probably need to get ready for this weekend.
Yeah, you know, we've had a lot of sort of meetings. You're allowed to meet outside, I think, longer. So we've had all our meetings are normally in marquees outside. So we've been able to chat and talk through what happened on the weekend. And it mainly just come down to the performance. I don't think we were happy with how we performed. Even if we lost the game, but performed well, I think the mood in camp would have been better. But like I said, fair play to Scotland. They made us play like that. So we're just going to look this week, obviously, to get our performance right. And we've spoken key groups and trying to cement what's gone wrong.
I think it's an easy thing after an international, look, well, from my own experiences, that you have the next week to put it right. And I presume Eddie would have gave you a bit of a chawing afterwards, but you kind of move on very quickly. And looking back at that game, and even I watched it a second time, there were so many opportunities you had. So I presume that's the plan this week, to go out and execute and put in the performance that you probably all know that, and we know that you're capable of as well.
Yeah, I think it was tough. Obviously, set piece normally is quite good for us, and it wasn't as stable as it has been. So then he put pressure on the backs, and I think when they had the ball, limited times, I don't know if it was like 20% or something stupid possession. You know, then they got to make their decisions, and might be in the back of their minds when you're scrumming and set pieces are going to plan. They change things. But yeah, this weekend, like I said, we're going to look at ourselves and hopefully have a dominant set piece. We've worked quite a lot on it this week, and then, you know, free us up a little bit.
Just a boring scrum question. What's the difference you've seen in them in the last 12 months between Scotland? Because obviously their scrum seems to have come on, they say, the last 2 years then, since De Villiers has been there. What's the biggest change in them?
I don't know. I think their engagement, obviously we look at speed of engage. We think that's quite a key area, and I think they were good at that on the weekend. And then they're just tightness post-engage. I think, you know, when the ball comes in, they're quite smart. So obviously you try and get constant pressure, and the nine was sort of looking to present the ball, didn't present the ball. And I think they're just a lot smarter than what they was. And it showed on the weekend. They got on top on a few scrums.
Are you tapping in for your contacts for this weekend, Adam? Are you like trying to get some information you're passing on to the Welsh?
Well, maybe if it'd be
Welsh scrums. Sure, Welsh scrums not good.
No, it hasn't been good since I retired, has it? So, to be fair.
I'll let Tom Francis know that.
Yeah, he's all right.
Look, I know it's obviously there's challenges as well. You're probably stocking up on your sleep. You do have a little one. I think 1 year's old, was it just at a birthday?
Yeah, Saturday was his birthday. He's one. Bit annoying to miss, but obviously FaceTimes. Yeah, it was good.
And in terms of this weekend, Sean, you're heading down to Exeter with London Irish. Have you got any questions you want to put in? Just get your own knowledge out.
No, I wouldn't do that here. I might send him an Instagram later or something. Even give us some private info. But no. We're looking forward to it, because they're obviously Exeter have had something very special the last while there, and it's a good test for us to see where we're at.
See, look, we get you on to chat and all these boys have done is try and tap into your info. But we do appreciate that you've taken the time to join us on House of Rugby. Best of luck for this weekend. Cheers. Because it is, of course, the second round of the Six Nations. But we're going to take a look back at the first round of the Six Nations, starting off with Wales against Ireland, a match that was defined by Ireland going down to 14 men after just 14 minutes. And yet so much of the conversation afterwards was about a missed kick at the very end from Billy Burns. Sean, do you think that was fair?
I don't think it's fair on Billy Burns. He's getting an awful time of it, obviously, on social media, etc. I would consider going down to 14 men and their lack of discipline in the last 15 minutes. Probably, I suppose then, let's say we'd brand it with discipline overall, was their biggest downfall. You know, he looks like the silly one because he's missed that kick that potentially could put him in a position to win the game. But, you know, as lots of out halves have said before, you know, he has to go for that. He has to be 5 metres out. There is a massive difference between being 10 or 15 metres out than being 5 out, especially with a maul and especially with a good defensive maul like Wales.
So, and 83 minutes on the clock.
Yeah, there's a lot of pressure there. But Billy will bounce back and he'll know not to pay attention to too much of the white noise outside of his control. We all get that at some stage in our career for doing stupid things. I remember in that 2015 World Cup, the Pape incident. Now, to be fair, I was in a bad place afterwards because we'd gotten beaten in the quarterfinal against Argentina, and I felt like I let everyone down in the setup because while we had missed. We were missing four or five lads with big injuries. I was sitting in the stand beside him after getting banned. So, it does sit badly with you for a while when you do let the side down and let the management let everyone down. But you have to move on. That's sport at the end of the day, and it's cruel at times. It's cruel on the individual. It's cruel on fans. It's cruel on everybody. But There'll be no one more so than Billy and Pete and these boys that will want to put it right when the opportunity comes to them again.
And Adam, from a coaching point of view, do you see things a little bit differently now that, you know, whereas a teammate, you might have had to, you know, bite your lip to sort of keep your anger in or something like that. Now you almost, what do? You put an arm around them? Because psychologically, that is going to be a tough one.
It's... You know, a short couple of days on the line, you might have the piss taken out by the boys a bit just to break the ice, and it'll be a bit easier for him. But he knows he's missed touch, and he hasn't cost him the game. Because Shawnee said, it's not like a foregone conclusion they were going to score a maul try, but you know, it was definitely put him in the right position. But no, you've got to put your arm around them, especially, you know, I've never kicked the ball in my life, so you know, it's perfect.
And Sean, it's an interesting point as well, though, because, you know, Johnny commandeers that 10 position, and there has been such a battle, whether it be a Ross Byrne or a Burns or whoever, for that. There's fine margins between who gets that sort of supporting role just now. So there is pressure just even getting into that position.
Yeah, there is. It's one of the areas, I suppose, that's been talked about a little bit back home as well at the minute, because you have Ross Byrne, which have his younger brother, Harry Byrne, breeding down all their necks. And then you have Jack Carty coming back into a bit of form, who's incredibly dangerous too. So you have lots of different people. I suppose, you get opportunities at that level, at test level, and you have to make the most of them. And coaches give you a certain amount of rope to find your feet and to make sure that you're, you know, doing what you can do at that level. And sometimes if you don't get it right on one or two occasions, you know, you might just slip down the pecking order again. And it's tough work at 10, you know, it's a tough job. Even though I fancy it myself, I think like later on in life, I might actually play
when you're 41.
Yeah, I might play a few games of 10 at some stage. I don't see what all the fuss is about. Maybe like a Dan Carter, just sit in the pocket. But no, it is tough, and there is pressure because you're the one running the game. You know what I mean? And you're the communicator, you're the decision maker, and you have to be on the ball 9 times out of 10 and get it right. And you know, if you get it wrong, you might not be there too long. So it's you know, it is tough and there is pressure and it is getting competitive back in Ireland again for that number 10 shirt.
But what's also interesting is it's, you know, these things don't just happen to 10s. We actually saw it with Freddie Burns, Billy's brother, in that Champions Cup match, Bath to lose, which ended up costing them. We saw it with Jacob Stockdale. You know, this time also last year, Stuart Hogg was, you know, not having a great time and people were saying that the captaincy was too much pressure on his shoulders. I suppose the difference now, particularly when you were playing, Adam, and I know that you're not really on social media anyway, is this extra horrible microscope of social media. And I know that Stuart Hogg, for example, doesn't go on his social media during a Six Nations. He hands control of that kind of stuff to his agents and things. And a lot of players are doing that because it's just an extra pressure that people don't need.
Oh, and yeah, 100%. It's tough, isn't it? I think we spoke about it probably a few months ago around it. And
yeah,
it's just, it is, it's hot and it's easy, isn't it? For the, it's an easy comment and it's a little tiny comment, which, you know, with, which just a little one liner can really sort of hurt the player. And, you know, then if you've had a shocker or you haven't done very well or something's happened, you know, you don't need, you know, some person you've never met before, no, you know, criticising you. And then, but it's also, the, it can still be the same around, you know, the reports in the papers and stuff, you know, it's, you know, your family read it and it upsets them and, you know, your parents reading it. It's, you know, so it's hard to get away from these, this day and age, I think, any sort of criticism or whether it's right or wrong. Or it's so tough for these players now. And I know certainly the younger boys coming through would, I'd imagine, struggle with it a lot more than someone like, say, Shawnee, who's, you know, been around the block a bit more, you know?
Yeah, it's brutal out there. You know, there's people sitting behind, obviously, laptops, phones, and they can do whatever they want with no consequences. And they can say whatever they want on social media. So, like, it's very tough. Like, you look at younger lads nowadays. I always say, like, younger people are when I say younger now, I mean 18, 19-year-olds. They're actually better at communicating on their phone than they are face-to-face. If you ask them to have a conversation with you, it'll stop after 2 minutes and they'll get out their phone and have a look at Instagram or something. So it's just the way society is now, and you have to have a very thick skin to be able to get over that stuff and get on with it very quickly and not pay attention to it. And that's why I think, like, sports psychologists and having good mentors in the game nowadays at a young age will really stand to some of these lads. I see Kyle Sinclair release a statement as well about, you know, getting banned for the two matches. And he realises now that it's him, he was the problem, not the ref or not anything else like that. So, like, that's a good thing as well, that he's actually spoke about it, realised what he needs to do as a player and move on from it. But social media is dangerous enough.
Yeah, the one that stands on me is probably, Rog in Pretoria in 2009, when we were, I think, well, what was it, last minute of the game, you know, ahead, trying to, you know, certainly looking to, you know, finish the game off. And yeah, and the thing with that, I think the issue with that was it the right call? I don't know, you know, it didn't end up the right way for us. But if you're looking at someone like Grona Garra, who's been around the block, he'd won Heineken Cups, you know, his dad played so many times for Ireland, you know, he's a, you know, an incredibly capable test match player. So, you know, you've got to make, you know, you make mistakes, and he made a mistake around just the timing of the tackle and whatnot. But, you know, I guess if that was now, that would have been, I can't imagine the sort of abuse he would get. You know, yeah. I think it would be tenfold to what it was at the time, you know, because obviously, look, we were all disappointed. I think I only found out, I was in hospital, I had my shoulder put back in, and, you know, I was in a van back with Jamie Roberts, Tommy Bowe, Brian O'Driscoll, and I didn't, you know, all of us, Gethin Jenkins as well, so it was five of us coming back from the hospital, and I certainly didn't know, because I'd been knocked out, so it was obviously, and I'd expect us to win, because we were comfortably winning until, yeah, you know, the sort of injuries happened. And yeah, but I think as a teammate, you know, you would be a little bit frustrated, or why did you do it, or why didn't you do something else? And there's a million questions, but you know, you'd never as a teammate, you know, slag him off in public or go into the press. And I don't think you would. Personally, I wouldn't do, even if you did totally disagreed with the decision to put it up and under and tackle him in the air. But it was, I can't imagine what it would be like now if that was the case.
Mm.
Now, last week, Adam, you weren't on, but we spoke about the intensity at training and when sometimes things boil over with the pressure of an international match round the corner. Now, I don't know what your intel tells us, but there's stories that came out last week about Jake Ball and Alan Wynne-Jones having a bit of a bust-up. What can you tell us?
Well... very much like asking about the scrum earlier, I learned very on not to ask Al too much in lead up to, you know, test matches. And I haven't asked him, but it's obvious what's happened. But this has happened a million times on rugby training pitches. Me and Shawnee would have been involved in teams of, you know, there's been a kerfuffle. I remember we played Ireland in 2008 and Tommy Bowe just signed for us, and he said, "Oh, the forwards had a massive punch up in the training session." And I think the big Munster prop, who's the big, not
Johnny Buckley,
he chinned one of the Munster back rowers in a session,
knocked out Dennis Leamy.
It was Leamy, and it was like, you know, this happens all the time, you know, and especially when it comes to mauling. Mauls gets a little bit. There's nothing legal about a maul anyway. So when you've got people flying in and coming in, hooking your leg, you know, pulling you out there, you know, tempers get flared. And it's a very physical part of the game where it's, you know, essentially 16 men all coming together and a little ball and having a wrestle. So it's, you know, these things happen a lot in rugby. You know, I'm pretty sure...
And this will sound a very naive question. This obviously is a question from somebody completely outside of it. But how do you bring that back from basically scrapping on a Thursday or whatever to... going at your opposition and being part of a team? Because there must be people that don't like each other, naturally. It happens in all workplaces. But how do you then get united to take on an opposition?
I don't think in our environments that people don't like each other. I genuinely don't buy that at all. I think it's, obviously, as Bam said there, certain times things boil over. Lads care so much for what's about to happen at the weekend that you're just a bit fired up at different times. And, you know, I think it happens in all sports. It's an unwritten rule in rugby. Once you leave that training field and cross that white line, there's no bringing back up stuff that happened on it or anything like that. There's a massive amount of respect for each other because we go out every single day and we fire our bodies around to train, training first and foremost, then at the weekends, and you do it all over again every week. So we're all in it together. There's no point in going into work, not liking someone. You make it work. It's like, I always think of it like a marriage or you're going out with someone. You know, it's a work. You have to work on it all the time for it to be really good. And, that's the way it is. And that's just the thing that's in rugby, I think, as well. It's something that if there is a bit of a bust up or hargy bargy, you shake hands and you leave it there and it's done with. And then you go to war at the weekend and you have each other's backs. And that's every setup I've ever been in. That's the way it's been. So I like that about the part of the game too.
Yeah, I think that's what's good. That's good about rugby, isn't it? It's like it's such a unique sport in that way. You know, I'm pretty sure, you know, the sport with a round ball, the players wouldn't have such a, you know, mentality around a bit of a scuffling training. Yeah, I'm sure Alan, you know, they're both big men and I'm sure they would have, you know, kissed a maid up pretty quick. You know, and this, you know, it's...
And you're dead right, Bomb. They'd actually have to kiss and make up because that is a thing as well.
I know that's a thing.
When you're in the circle afterwards.
That's definitely a thing where you come from. Because...
What do you mean?
Jenny Flannery does that with us.
Yeah.
So...
I've been in circles. Welsh lads have done it too. Don't forget.
Explain what you're talking about.
So
here,
if there is a bit of a scrap or someone is hargy bargy or people grab each other during the session and it's just boiling at boiling point, there's a kiss and make up at the end of the session. So when you're in the circle, you have to go and give the fella a kiss on the cheek or a kiss on the lips. And that's it then. It's done. Like, so it's a kiss and make up. And it's just a bit of crack for the lads.
it's definitely an icebreaker and it makes it less awkward.
Yeah, it makes it less awkward.
Yeah.
There you go.
No. So there you go, Lee. The next time you have, a row with one of your
girls, I'm coming down to training.
Have a case of makeup.
Well, we were just talking there before scrapping about social media and the pressures and the negatives that it can bring. We saw an awful lot of discussion on social media and in the press, and actually even in First Minister's questions on Monday to Nicola Sturgeon, after the confusion, let's call it, at Twickenham, where not all players took the knee. Now, let's just say that the Championship said that that was a personal choice. The unions have said it was a personal choice. Sean, Adam, what do you make of the fact that players are given the opportunity to make their own stance and therefore then have to take the rap for it? Or should it be a unified thing?
I kind of think, obviously everyone is different and everyone has personal opinions on bits and pieces. And I've seen it with some of, let's say, the Islander boys with us. They have different beliefs and, you know, you have to respect that too. I then, on the flip side, I think the unions, if they're really serious about this, have to, like, you know, think about it from, if they're really, really serious about a bigger picture and actually have some, I don't know, have it within a box, like, and say, okay, this is what we're doing, this is what every team is doing, and then just go with it. Because at the minute, you know, there's a lot of people, I suppose, criticising the whole thing about, oh, well, why didn't he do it, or why did he do it, and why didn't he do it, or didn't do it. So I get the words out there eventually. But yeah, it's a bit all over the place at the minute. And then you have people sitting at home watching this and saying, well, what's going on here? But I think it's just a bit messy at the minute, leaving it. And then players themselves are getting abused for it.
Yeah, and we've seen this happen in a lot of different sports as well. It seems to be that it's the athletes who end up taking the flak. But it's a good time to bring in Dragons winger Ashton Hewitt, who has been very active in the push to stamp out racial inequalities. And I know that, Ashton, this comes from a very personal place as well, because you have had some horrific abuse on social media. Taking the knee is a personal choice, and I think it's also worth pointing out that if you don't take a knee doesn't mean to say that you're racist. Let's just make that clear. People like Billy Vunipola and others have put out their own personal take on things. Where do you stand on this sort of thing that's just blowing up? Because actually it's been in the Autumn Nations Cup. We've seen it in a lot of different other situations, but the Six Nations being as big as it is, it's just become inflamed again.
Yeah, and for me, I think it's 100% people's personal preference on what they want to do. I've never gone at people for not taking a knee, because personally, I'd like to take a knee. The biggest thing for me is information and understanding the topic, because I feel like no matter what happens, whether you take a knee or you don't take a knee, someone's going to fire questions at you or criticise you on social media or in the media. And I think people need to be prepared to answer those questions and have the information to answer those questions, you know, whatever sort of side they take. Because at the moment, you know, it was getting called a moment of reflection, I think, about racism. Yeah. For the Six Nations. And, you know, for me, who's faced racism and is trying to fight racism, I don't know what that means. I don't think about, you know, racism 10 seconds before an international, and then, you know, the game comes around and it's gone until next week and you have another 10 seconds. So I don't really know what it means in terms of a moment of reflection. And it comes back to what Sean said. It's just messy. There's no clarity. There's no obvious understanding as a collective, you know, as a rugby community. And I just, 100% agree with Sean. It's just messy and a bit all over the shop.
How have the Dragons been in the union? How is it with them?
Dragons have been amazing. I think obviously we were back in training through the thick of the protests and the Black Lives Matter debate in terms of the organisation and the movement and taking a knee, and it was all in the heat of that. And the Dragons were amazing in giving me the opportunity to speak to the boys as a collective and sort of give my view on it and, you know, different views on it and show my understanding. you know, share my experiences so boys understand what it means. So they were great in that sense, you know, giving me the platform to speak to the boys, said they'd support me in what I needed. And it just encouraged, you know, the number of one-to-one conversations I had with the boys, phone calls, texts after training, over a coffee. And at the start of it all, boys, you know, there was no way they were going to take a knee. They didn't know what it was about. They thought it was, you know, a mental group in America taking a knee for political gains, et cetera, et cetera. But after, you know, I told them to look at X, Y, and Z and explain to them a little bit and, you know, that I don't support any organization. It's just about how I feel. You know, the majority of the boys took a knee. And even if they didn't take a knee, at the end of the day, they've gained more information, a greater insight, they're more educated about the topic, you know, to help them make an informed decision about taking a knee rather than looking down the line at England players taking a knee and taking a knee.
And I think that's a really good point, Ashton, because the thing which frustrates me is that what is actually meant to be a positive gesture ends up, the focus shifts and it's all about who hasn't done it as opposed to who has done it. And it creates negative headlines. And I think lazy headlines as well. I mean, the media do have to take responsibility as well. But it shouldn't just be a gesture. It shouldn't just be a 20-second mark on a Saturday or Sunday before a match. You know, this is something which needs to be implemented from the top level to the bottom level. And it needs to be more than just signposting, doesn't it?
100%. And until it's really taken seriously, because for a start, unions, competition organisers, you know, all the people who are in control of these big organisations, first of all, need to get the understanding down to a T themselves to be able to implement these things and really affect change and know the best way to go about these things. Because at the moment, you know, I've had various conversations with people and apparently there's stuff going on behind the scenes, but they don't really know how to address it in the public forum. And I think, you know, it's great if things are going on behind the scenes. There's always an argument for that in terms of, I don't take a knee, but, you know, I fully support anti-racism. And when I hear about what's going on behind the scenes, number one, what is going on behind the scenes? Because, you know, addressing racism isn't just a one-liner. But I also find it hugely important to be visible and transparent in what you are doing, you know, for people to really understand it, you know, people who are affected by it or not, to see it as really genuine. Because at the moment, the names of these campaigns, if you like, are chopping and changing, jumping about. It's rugby against racism 1 minute for one weekend, then it's something else. What's really going on? And it comes back to what Sean said, it's messy. You know, I'm trying my hardest to sort of understand it and engage in it, and I don't really know what's coming out of it at the moment.
I think like organisations just jump on bandwagons when it comes to stuff like this as well. And that's a problem too. They wanted like for their own like to be seen to be doing something. And again, what Ashton's just said, they don't understand it, because we, as you just pointed out there, we should be more educated on different aspects of all this and understand it from a player's point of view. But organisations are just like hashtagging this and putting out social media campaigns for themselves. It's not really for what it's meant to be for.
And even NFL got slammed at the weekend during the Super Bowl because they've put all this money, I think it's $250 million, into a campaign, which is admirable. But, you know, it wasn't that in 2016 when Colin Kaepernick took the knee, and it's, you know, he was the first, and you've got to be brave to be the first. It's maybe slightly easier now if there's a whole line of you.
Yeah, definitely. And if we look at history, Colin Kaepernick's probably the most recent of you know, public figures and athletes who have, you know, put their neck on the line, really, in for what they believe in. And it's only, it's taken this long for him to be admired. You know, it turns out politicians now admire him when, before they were calling for him to get his sacked. If you look back through history and you've got Muhammad Ali, he's loved now, he was hated at one point. You know, you've got a long line. You know, when it comes to the Black Power salute at the Olympic Games, you know, it happens and there's a long line, and people come around. I just wish people would be more proactive and clear in what they're trying to do and genuine, to be honest.
And I think that's a good point, that people who say that there's no place for politics in sport, you just have to go back to probably every Olympic Games from the Second World War onwards. And even last year, you had the US Open, Naomi Osaka making big political statements. You know, the Williams sisters hadn't played Indian Wells for over 10 years. In Formula One that I work in as well, we have Lewis Hamilton making big waves. And I just sort of wonder if, you know, rugby has big names. You've got Sia Khaleesi, Cheslin Kolbe, Maro Itoje, three players signed to something like Roc Nation, Jay-Z's company that manages Rihanna. They've got 1.45 billion followers on social media. So there are big names that can make a wave in a different way. Is there a better way for rugby players to be doing this? Because we've seen it in other sports.
We have seen it in other sports, and I think for rugby it's very new. And speaking about my experience, we've never had anything to sort of organise everyone, if you like. And everyone, there's been no platform for players who have been affected to really come together and share their experiences and think about things going forward. Because my experience is, you know, very few black players in Wales, and racism was very much normalised for me. You know, and that might be a bit different to players in England and how they dealt with it and what was available to them. And I'm not sure on their experiences, but in terms of demographic, it's different everywhere. Your support systems are different everywhere. So that's why it's so important for players to have the full backing of their union, their clubs, their governing bodies. They need that support, you know, because it, people who are affected by it shouldn't just have to rely on each other, if you know what I mean. I think it's everybody's problem.
Yeah, a good point from Adam as well there. And nice to hear that, you know, that your teammates are wanting to learn about it and the Dragons are putting you in that position as well, because ultimately it's education, isn't it? It doesn't matter what age you are.
100%. And, you know, I've experienced racism my whole life, and a lot of the time people see me as a semi successful rugby player maybe, and, you know, think that I don't have, you know, those issues in my life, and that I haven't faced those things because I'm doing well, I'm playing rugby, I appear to be having a good time, which I am. So when I explained it to a lot of my teammates and the stuff that I've experienced outside of rugby, a lot of them were gobsmacked, and they were really surprised at some of my experiences. And because, you know, they know me personally, and I think it hit them a bit more then, and they started to realise, right, this is real. And then I've had boys saying, right, you're some of the most conservative boys that I've met, you know, and they've, like, right, so what can I do now? They started off, you know, 4 weeks ago, they were just hammering everything. Look, come on, is it going too far now? Et cetera, et cetera. And, it's great to see those boys changing their views and asking what more they can now do to help. So, I just think we need to keep pushing more of that and giving people the right information.
Yeah, well, it's great that you've got a voice and you're using social media for the positive. And thank you so much for coming on and sort of helping us tell this story, because there is a slight irony, you know, a white Scottish girl, white Welshman and a white Irishman having this discussion. But we've all got to learn here, and we all want to do this for the right reason.
There's another thing here as well, Lee. There's a difference between forwards and backs. Look at me and Bomb, and look at Ashley. Pretty face as well.
Let's get it back to the rugby.
You know he's a winger.
Yeah, I'll stay out of the way. Me.
He's definitely a lot quicker than us as well. Ash, just quickly, what do you think of the Welsh result on Saturday or Sunday? But good, happy with it?
Well, it's always good to get a win. You know, you never know how it's going to go against the Irish. Strong team, and they kept themselves in it till the very end. I'm sure there was a couple of apologies flying around in Gar Davis kicking that ball away at the end of 10 seconds to go, and it left us with a very tense 5 minutes in overtime. But the boys dug in. Maybe it should have been a more convincing win than what it was, but you know, at the end of the day, it's the first game of the Six Nations and we've come away with a win. So it's a good start.
Cheers. Give Ibs my best in training tomorrow.
Yeah, I will. I'll just hammer him like I do every day.
I said he's big fat arse.
Keep it up. Keep it up, man. He needs as much arm as much as possible.
Thanks so much, Ashton.
Cheers, Ashton. All the best.
Well, guys, I don't know if you heard the comments from Sam Warburton at the weekend that were on the BBC, but were picked up pretty much everywhere after that. Obviously, Italy capitulated to their 28th consecutive defeat. And Sam has really gone in hard saying that there should be relegation in the Six Nations. I know it's been talked about for what seems like forever. But Adam, is now the time for, it would be Georgia, to be given a chance? Have Italy had their time?
Obviously, it's the constant question we've had for, and it's always the same thing, isn't it? Are Georgia strong enough to be in the Six Nations? I don't know. With Italy, you've got the two professional teams. You know, Treviso very well coached. Obviously, my old boss is going in now. You know, Italy have, obviously they're flattered to see him internationally, but the standard in the Six Nations now is very high. But, you know, whether Georgia would come in and do any better, I don't know. So for me, I'm not sure. I'm not too sure. And it'd be more competitive, but also, as Redson was sent through around, if England got relegated, then, it's going to be an absolute, Ireland have probably got more chance to get relegated, but, it's just...
Why do you think that is?
Well, just on the downward slope.
Lucky I can't get my hands on you now.
Can't, but we'd have to have masks and everything. So it's weird. I don't know. It's been one of the questions for me. It's always the same thing, and it's always... Are Georgia strong enough?
They didn't set the world alight in the Autumn Nations Cup, did they? So, Sean, where do you stand on this?
Yeah, I'm kind of the same. I don't think they're strong enough, to be honest. I don't think they're strong enough because I think if they were to consecutively play as well with their depth, question their depth of their squad, if they lost a few of their big boys in the front row. I know they're bringing in bigger boys, but they're probably not as good as rugby players in terms of having like depth throughout all the positions. So, as you go through the tournament, you're going to lose a few. You always lose a few people, and I just think it could end up, being pretty embarrassing for them if they got more structure around the professional game, and got more quality into their whole setup and got a bit of strength and depth. It'd be something to look at again. Mm-hmm. But in fairness, like, I know Italy have lost 28 times. They've improved, but the problem is other teams are improving as well and getting a little bit better, and they're just the gap between them and everyone else is just big at the minute. So I'd probably leave it as it is, to be fair, at the minute. I can't see a relegation kind of making the tournament any better.
Well, there's some really good points that have been coming through our social media channels. And Owen McKenna says, just make it the Five Nations again. Then he goes on to say, Italy are a joke and Georgia would be no better. But does it need to be a Six Nations? I mean, Scotland are obviously the reigning Five Nations champions, and it would be a shame to lose that title.
You've clung on for that for 20-odd years, isn't it?
Exactly. We'll never lose that unless we go in Owen's respect.
I don't know if that's the right thing to do, but I don't think, I think that would be a backward step, wouldn't it? That's just...
Yeah, exactly.
All right, next. John O'Ramsdale says, I like the idea of the loser of the Six Nations play the winner of the Europe Rugby Championship to decide who can be in the Six Nations.
Yeah, not a bad idea,
but like a Strictly dance-off. Orson James, Six Nations wouldn't cope financially if England got relegated.
Why?
Well, I don't know. He's not here.
Yeah, exactly.
He's not.
Of course the Six Nations would financially be okay if England got relegated. There's five other nations that are contributing to that.
Blame Orson James. Don't blame me.
Or maybe that's where all the dough is going that I keep on about from the English camp is going to their players.
Let's not talk about the England match, please, ever again. But we can talk about the England match because that's coming up on Saturday against Italy, who we've just been talking about. Predictions, please, starting with you, Adam.
England are going to win comfortably, I think. Yeah, there's going to be a reaction. The Sarri's boys, they're another sort of 60, 80 minutes back into it, and it's going to be a tough old campaign for Italy.
Yeah, I'd agree completely. He's bringing back Sinclair and Macco as well, Macco Vunipola. So that'll add to their arsenal this weekend, and a very, very comfortable win in the end, I predict.
All right, after that one is Scotland-Wales, which is an interesting one. Adam, we'll go to you first.
We don't often lose in Scotland, so I think we might sneak it. I know Scotland are flying high, obviously, but I think we'll. Obviously, I'm very biased in this, but I think we might sneak it. I think
you are entitled to an opinion. You've worked pretty hard over the years to have an opinion, so I will take that opinion.
I'm going to go for Scotland here. I'm going to go for Scotland for two reasons. One, I thought their attack is dangerous. And the second thing is they always grow into the Six Nations. So I haven't started well. Hopefully they continue that trend. But usually at the end of the tournament, they're quite dangerous. I'm going to go for Scotland. I think with their set piece is pretty good. Their D was unbelievable last week. And, their attack is very dangerous with a few very dangerous people pulling the strings. So I'm saying Scotland.
Can I just say, I do hope the defence goes really well because my very good friend Steve Tandy is the defence coach there. So yeah. I hope that if it's like a 6-3 to Wales, that'd be ideal.
You'd be happy.
Oh, so what, you've just said 30 points. now you're changing your mind.
I've backtracked. Yes. quickly.
We'll edit that bit out. We'll save you. Ireland, France on Sunday, Sean.
This is going to be a tough one. I think it's obviously a massive game. Ireland will be hurting after last week. They'll want to put things right. I think at home we'll sneak it, but it'll be incredibly tough. And I think it'll be maybe just by three, maybe. But France last week had an easy game. I'd be more worried if they had a hard game last week and won. They're not going to get it like they got it last week. So I'm saying Ireland by three.
I think Ireland will sneak it, but I probably around that point, Sean. I think there's not going to be a complacency. I know everyone says about Sean going to France, but he won't allow them to be complacent. You know, he's going up against I know he's not the head coach, but he's going up against a former teammate, a former sort of protege of his own in Faz, you know, with two Wigan legends, and his pride won't allow France to go in early and, you know, won't go into the shell and think it's easy. I think if Ireland can match them physicality early doors, I think France have a bigger pack, but Ireland's pack is, you know, very, you know, competitive, is very fit, is very, you know, there's a lot of really good players there. I think if I can match them early doors, I think France will lose.
Gents, thank you very much. We've covered plenty of topics throughout the night. Hopefully to everyone who's been listening or watching the show, you've enjoyed it, and we'll see you next week. Bye-bye.
You've been listening to the House of Rugby Season 3 on Joe.